The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, talking a little bit faster because I got my coffee.
You got your coffee. We're good to go. Power was out up until about 40 minutes ago. And a massive storm that came through the Dallas area on Sunday.
Couldn't believe the one apartment complex where the construction crane fell on it. And
you know,
I think one person's been killed, but the damage done... The pancaking, it looked like, almost of the floors of the parking garage.
Yeah.
That was frightening.
Yeah. I still don't have any word as to what they have found, because early on, first responders weren't able to get to, you know, it's very dangerous getting in there, in that area, in that parking garage, that collapsed garage. And so we don't know the status of what they suspect, or if they suspect people may be in their cars. So we'll look into that. But one person dead, several people injured.
It's very seriously critically injured.
In that collapse and that part of that, the effect, I guess, of the storm, which came through. So our thoughts and prayers for everyone that was affected. Our area here in north, we're just north of the Dallas city limits, and the lights were out. I live close. My lights never went out. My power never went out. But the power was out here and in much of this area since 1:30 in the afternoon, and now it's back.
Yeah, just passed by me 15 miles east of me.
Yeah, it came down from from Oklahoma, you know, across the Red River, and it was just slowly moving southeast. And so you guys, where you were, didn't get much. Alan, our associate producer, he lives further west of here. He didn't get hardly anything at all. He said there was really nothing.
It wasn't a huge cell. I mean, it wasn't something that spanned 150 miles.
No, and it was straight winds. I mean, it was this outflow boundary, as they call it.
I remember, maybe it's right when I moved in, it was when I had to replace the first shingles I've ever had to replace in my house. And they said where I was, it was roughly 100 miles straight, you know, straight winds.
Right.
And it's like it's like a hurricane.
If you look at some of the footage from restaurants and stuff that people posted on social media during the afternoon on Sunday, Addison, Texas, just a few miles northeast of here, with the heavy rain, because even at my house, which is not close or not far from the studio, it wasn't really heavy rain. There was some rain, but really not heavy, and it didn't last. But just a few miles northeast of there, heavy rain and wind, and some of the video, it looks like hurricane footage. It does. Amazing.
All right, so here's the poll. You ready?
All right.
Harris poll for Axios on HBO. It was a poll for whatever that show was, apparently. Axios on HBO finds that socialism is gaining popularity. 4 in 10 Americans say they would prefer living in a socialist country over a capitalist one.
Huh.
55% of women between 18 and 54 would prefer to live in a socialist country than a capitalist country. But a majority of men prefer to live in a capitalist country. Now, here's the thing. Do we know what socialism is? These questions were asked. The Harris poll result below here shows the public had various levels of agreement on what exactly constitutes a socialist political system. 76% believe that it is universal health care. 72% believe it is a tuition-free education.
Hmm.
By the way, that makes sense.
Right. And you know what? Gimmeism.
You know, it makes sense because of the gimmeism of the Democrats are promoting universal health care and tuition free education,
right.
And they're being called socialists. Those are the two things that they're. So yes, that makes sense. Living wage 68%. State controlled economy 66%. State control and regulation of private property 61%. Does 61% know that the state control and regulation of private property actually makes it communism to that particular point?
Right.
High taxes for the rich, 60%. State-controlled media and communications, 57%. Oh, good. Then you understand that, PBS is, socialism. High taxes for the rich, 60%. Strong environmental regulations, 56%. Mm. High public spending, 55%. Government democratizes private business, that is, gives workers control over them to the greatest extent possible, 52%. I don't know why they threw that in there. A system dependent on the dictatorship, 49%. This makes it clear why somebody called up a couple of weeks ago and made this point with us. Workers own and control their own places of employment. 48% thought that is socialism. And a democratically elected government, 46% of people believe that's socialism.
Now, I would say that if we had a fully democratic controlled government right now, we'd be closer to socialism, which is not the point.
Well,
of that.
If it was a direct democracy, yes, but they're not saying they're saying a democratically elected government,
which
we are.
Yes,
is 46%, which is completely wrong. The other one is workers own and control their own places of employment. 48%, because we had a guy call last week, or 2 weeks ago, and say that he said
employee owned businesses.
Yeah, he goes employee owned businesses. I mean, that's socialism.
No, it's not. It is not.
Nothing to do with socialism.
No.
Because you own and control your own workplace. Socialism, as we've talked about before, socialism is government control of capital up to the point where then you get the government control of private property, where nobody owns any private property anymore, and the nationalization of industry is when you move into communism.
Right.
Socialism is basically government control of more capital. So every society is socialist to some form or manner. And it's the degree of socialism.
Mm-hmm.
For example, whenever we bring up socialism, not anymore because people, I think, have learned what our debate point's going to be. Well, Social Security, it's socialism. Well, technically, that's more socialism. But still, a society that just has socialism would be viewed as a very minorly controlled socialist government, if that's all you were.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you move up to where the Democrats wish to move up to you, and you see, for example, where the Democrats wish for government to control, universal health care.
Right.
Which many Democrats means not just the insurance, but that would also be the whole medical profession is completely and totally run by the government.
Mm-hmm.
That's taking away an industry. That's government control of an industry and therefore government control of private property, which actually moves you more to communism at that particular point. Tuition-free education, that's more government control of capital. Living wage, again, that's government control of capital through regulation.
Right.
State-controlled economy, again, a state-controlled economy, at that point you're getting very close at that. Depending on what the definition is, you're getting close to communism because that's the elimination of private property.
Mm-hmm.
If the state controls the economy, they control the property. Once the property is gone and once nobody has any property at that particular point and the nationalization of industries, that would be more communism at that point as you move into that. So there you go.
Hmm.
So... half the people think that what is capitalism, though, and what is democracy is socialism. So what do you do?
Right, right. Yeah.
you know, I don't know what you do unless
this gets back to the point we've been making for a while now with pollsters. You need to have a pre-qualification. You need to have an exam that they pass so you can determine. But this really is that qualifying type poll of what people believe, what they define, how they define, in this case, socialism. And I think to myself, man, first of all, A, can we see more polls like this? We see them every once in a while, but when you see, gosh, I don't know, any given poll, we always go back to, okay, great, did they ask these people to name the three branches of government before they asked them to answer the questions about the topic?
Well, I know that you and I have always stopped people in their tracks whenever people start, you know, promoting a you know, socialism slash communism, whatever. Mm-hmm. For example, nationalized health care.
Right.
Or, you know, you'll get the left, or we get, you know, AOC talking about the Green New Deal and transforming all of society and making, and as soon as you say making companies produce a product they don't wish to produce, that means the stockholders are gone and the government would have to take over those industries.
Right.
That would be, that's a natural progression. People aren't going to produce something that you tell them to produce and regulate because they're not, stockholders will flee. Mm-hmm. There'll be no company left because nobody's going to invest their money into a government-run corporation. Now, the problem is, as we've stated before, as soon as we bring up to these people, like for healthcare, and we say, well, wait a minute, you're against monopolies. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because then they control everything and they shouldn't do it. They can control prices. Well, then if the government controls it, they can do the same.
Right. Of course they can. Yep. They control, they control all of the regulations and everything surrounded.
Why do you believe that government can do a better job controlling an industry? Well, because they care more. Okay, the Republicans win power.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're silent. We've never got past that silent part of them. Okay, then the Republicans are in power. Do you want the Republicans running your healthcare industry then at that point, mm-hmm. since you've decided to give them full government control?
Right.
Well, because government cares. Well, if government cares, then why would my cousin have died under the Canadian healthcare system? Because they wouldn't provide the technology for his brain tumor.
Right.
And he had to come to the United States for it. So they don't always care.
No.
They care some of the time. So why do you want it? And it's, again, I go back to the
Kevin and Ken vote.
Kevin and Ken vote, mm-hmm. back in 2012.
Kevin and Ken.
Wow, haven't said that in a while. Wow, Deep Voice guy remembers. And Kevin and Ken were different names, but mm-hmm. two guys that I know that have always provided for their families, have always worked, probably worked multiple jobs. Are loyal Democrats. I can guess right now, I haven't talked to them in ages. I'm guessing they hate Trump.
Okay.
Hate Trump.
Yeah.
But this is going back to the whole Romney thing. And the night before that election, I said, when we could see that through the polls, a vast majority of people agreed on the ideas with Romney.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't agree with Obama. They agreed with Romney even before the election, and we knew it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet Obama won the next day. And I said, if they win, it's probably because of the Kevin and Ken vote. I brought up these two guys that I know that every time I had an economic discussion with them, they agreed with me.
Right.
Yep, government should do that. Yep, uh-huh, government should stay out of that. Yep, you're right. There isn't anything that I couldn't convince them of when we had a discussion, a rational discussion.
Right.
But they're voting Democrat because if all hell breaks loose, they feel the Democrats will give them more. That the big government is needed there to protect them. I do believe that's probably where the socialist thought comes from in this country. There is this delusion that government can take care of everything.
And not be intrusive.
Well, that just government can take care of everything.
Right.
We're not even to the intrusiveness part of it. There's just this belief that government is like a god. That government cannot fail. That government will be there no matter what.
And
it's false, but
here's one thing that I don't know, it's hard to measure, but the dynamic or the impact, I guess, of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. By the end of two terms, it was Obama didn't really do anything for us. Premiums were skyrocketing nothing was happening. And, of course, it was the government needs to just, what, give us something. Just hand it to us. Well, if they can't afford the Affordable Care Act, if we can't afford Medicare for some, there's no way in the world you afford Medicare for all. Now, it might be a lot like today's Medicare, where you're still going to have to go out and get supplemental. But it would likely be that instead of carrying you for a few months of the year or a month or two of the year with current Medicare, it's going to carry you after January, your supplemental. It is insane to think that it can all be paid for. But people don't care. If they knew about the national debt, if they knew about the problem that we're facing on that alone, they would realize that they don't care about the debt. They don't care about any of it. They don't care about what the government needs to spend. In their mind, just spend it. I want mine.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Your pump for summer, but are your tires? As the temperature outside goes up, so does the importance of tire maintenance. The key to staying on the road this summer is to stay on top of regular tire inspections. If your truck isn't equipped with a tire pressure monitoring system, invest in a quality tire gauge. Check your tire pressure before and after every route while the tires are cold. Measuring tire pressure while they're hot can give an inaccurate reading since tire pressure increases as tires get warmer, especially during use. Pressure levels should match the manufacturer recommended cold PSI level, which you can find on the sidewall of your tires. Catching under or overinflated tires early on is the key to minimizing downtime this summer. Stop into a TA truck service near you for all of your tire service needs today.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. But the poll did show that women that prefer socialism in America to men. It's been a truth of American politics for decades that women are to the left of men. And I think that's what's playing out in this particular poll. They are looking for someone, a candidate on either side, who will support this idea of a socialist country that they want to live in. Huh. Which is, again... as we said before, we don't believe that we live in a socialist nation. I don't believe that women, the majority of women, actually want socialism. They want gimmeism.
Right. They want the programs. They want
the programs.
Programs.
Right. The takeyism, they're not so high on.
Right.
And you need both to get socialism.
Yeah.
Unless the takeyism, as we've been so good at doing, we have found the moral high ground of the takeyism, where we said, let's takeyism from our children, our grandchildren,
right,
and our great-grandchildren. That's how we can morally justify it.
Well, what did AOC say to NPR a few months ago? You know, well, everybody knows about deficit spending, and the host doing the interview, well, yeah, but you know that has to be paid for eventually. I mean, got to pay that back. And then she just kind of hem-hawed around that part of it. Well, you got to pay for it at some point. Nah, nobody cares about $22 trillion. Who's going to care about $50 trillion?
Well, you actually have to pay for it right now.
Yes.
It's whether you borrow it.
Right, exactly. Yes, no, you're going to pay for it. But you're going to pay for it with future money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Future America is going to lend you money.
Right. You'll pay the interest and the principal later on down the line.
Right.
They're loaded for bear. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. This story was really interesting. That family that owned and operated an Ohio bakery near Oberlin College suffered accusations of racism and protest after stopping a black Oberlin College student from shoplifting. That prompted the Gibson family, which has owned and operated the business since its inception, to sue the colleges from the DailyWire.com and its interim president and dean of students, asserting that they had defamed the bakery and caused emotional distress. On Friday, a jury awarded the family $11 million.
Wow.
A witness for the plaintiffs, an accountant, had testified that the Gibsons were set to lose about $5.8 million over the next 30 years because of the accusations of racism. He noted that the business has been in operations for over 130 years, adding that when you have people thinking you're a racist and you live in a small town, the accusation can last a lifetime.
Right.
A witness testifying for the defendants claimed the business was only worth $35,000.
Hmm.
According to the lawsuit filed by the Gibson family, David Gibson and his son were working at the bakery in November of 2016 when Jonathan Aladdin entered the bakery with two other students. According to the Chronicle Telegram newspaper, Oberlin police had reported that, I guess it's Aladdin, tried to buy a bottle of wine, but Alan Gibson, whose family owns the bakery, refused to sell it to him. Gibson confronted Aladdin about the two bottles of wine the student allegedly had hidden under his shirt.
Wow.
The police report said Gibson told Aladdin he was calling the police and not to leave. Aladdin allegedly tried to leave, and Gibson told police he took out his phone to take a picture. That's when Gibson said Aladdin snapped the phone from his hand, and the device hit Gibson in the face. Police have said Aladdin then ran from the store, dropping the two bottles of wine on the floor. Gibson chased after Aladdin, and the two men got into a physical confrontation outside. When police arrived, they reported seeing Gibson on the ground with Aladdin, Lawrence, and Whetstone hitting him, the three people that were there, the three people that tried to shoplift. The lawsuit then quoted Aladdin's written statement, but eventually Aladdin was arrested and charged with robbery, a felony of the second degree. The family, trying to quiet the situation down and thinking what was best for the community, agreed to a plea deal whereby the felony robbery charge would be dismissed and replaced with the far lesser charge, attempted theft, which is second-degree misdemeanor. But the Oberlin judge stated that that was unacceptable as he worried about the precedent that would be set. The lawsuit noted that following the arrest of the three students, Oberlin College staff, including deans and professors, joined the demonstrations in front of the bakery. They handed out a flyer that accused the bakery of racially profiling and discriminating against the three students. The flyer even stated that the bakery is a racist establishment with a long account of racial profiling and discrimination. So then apparently the professor, they had people that they knew were out front, and they were able to sue the college and other
wow.
people for a total of $11 million
wow.
for defaming their character.
Wow.
Wow.
You think about the impact of something like that. I mean, it goes back to the Sandman lawsuits, against the media. And when the media essentially did their hit job on that day, and all those other students along with Sandman were, basically positioned as and labeled as bigots, racists. When you get into that kind of law, when you get into that kind of lawsuit, you start adding up the damage and you put a dollar to it, and it becomes something massive, especially given the power of the media in that case. it'll be interesting to see where that goes, if the media settles or if they fight this or where. Okay, here's a question. I don't think we asked the question then, but does the media fight it because it's really about Trump? Do they fight it? They're not going to win. That would be horrible to do that because...
Oh, you don't mean the Baker case.
No.
You mean
yeah.
The Sandman case.
Yes, in the Sandman case. Do they fight it? Because, again, the truth is the truth, and it came out fairly quickly, and they were corrected. But I wonder if there is, behind closed doors, this mindset that we can't lose, because if we lose, this is going to be a win for Trump.
Well, here would be the thing. Either you settle out of court with no amount, and nobody claims guilt.
Right.
But is that what Sandman, is that what he wants?
Right. Does he want that? Do the lawyers want it?
Right. Does he want it? Do the lawyers want it? Does his family want it? Or do they want them to admit, is the money not enough? Do they want them to admit, either be found, you know, and that's a question to be asked. And a lot of times people say, well, wait a minute. Well, you know, because in a deal, well, we'll up the amount as long as we don't have to admit any wrongdoing. And then the newspaper will run, we didn't do anything wrong. We admitted no wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
You paid the money out. Everybody knows it. But I know that I would want them either to admit it or lose in court.
Yeah, you want to correct. You want to correct.
That's me. That's what I would want.
Right.
The money I know people say, well, if you have the money. I don't have that kind of money that he's suing for. What is he suing for, $250
million? Yeah, it's huge.
He's got two lawsuits for $250 million.
Right.
That's a half a billion. I know the one caller called one time and said, you guys are billionaires. We are not.
No, not yet. It'll be a few minutes before we reach that.
Oh, believe me. I don't have anywhere. I don't know what $250 million would. Well, I haven't won a Powerball yet.
Oh, yeah. Somebody won one of the big prizes on one of the lotteries.
No. It was one of the smaller prizes. Probably wasn't like $300 million.
That's right. Yeah. That's not even worth buying a ticket for. Yeah.
What was it?
What's the total? 530? What was it? Mega Millions?
530?
It's
fine. No, we didn't pay it. It's a half a billion.
We didn't pay attention anymore. After taxes, nah.
No, I would want the media to be held accountable. I can't see of a thing, unless it was a family member who might have been injured in some way and taking care of them was more important, and I might settle that. I might settle if it was somebody else.
Right.
If it was just me, I'd never settle. I just wouldn't do it.
Right. In order to make the point.
If I'm going to make the point, I'm going to make the point.
Yeah, well, and that's it, because here's my question. I guess if it's an undisclosed amount, certainly people would know that it's still a significant amount, right? Even if it doesn't get to a $500 million combined.
Right.
And at that point, you become famously wealthy. But you still have this stigma attached to you, and there is no correction of that. You know, no admission of guilt. No correction by the media to come out and say this is. And then on the other side of that, it's, do you really believe they mean it, or are they just being forced to do it by the lawyers?
Well, I don't
judge.
Well, I don't care. Mm-hmm. And I don't need an apology. You know how sometimes you have to give an apology. Mm-hmm. I don't need an apology. I just need them, because I don't expect. I don't think an apology. Again, I don't think they care about it.
Mm-hmm.
All I want is in the lawsuit where they admit they did wrong. That's all I want. I could care less about the apology.
Mm-hmm.
I win as soon as they say, we did wrong.
Right.
We defamed you. Then that's all I care about. I don't want, you know, well, then they had to apologize and take out a full page ad in the newspaper.
Right.
And no, I don't need that. I need it set in public that you did wrong. You defame me. I know the apology isn't sincere, so why would I go for it? All I want is you have to admit you were wrong.
Right.
And a nice punitive damage. Give me $10 million for punitive damage.
Right.
Then again, you know, you look at it and they could say his entire life has been destroyed.
Well, and that would be the point.
Forget about punitive. Maybe punitive would be less. I mean,
because his attorneys are the attorneys that represented Richard Jewell, the Olympic Park at one point suspect that they named the Olympic Park bombing going back to Georgia years ago, but the media had labeled him as a suspect. And that's where, you know, they started changing the terminology and the words they were using to
person of interest. Right.
And so I'm guessing a Richard Jewell would, I don't know if he, did he change his name? I can't remember if he did. But you would almost have to, you know? You would almost have to do that. The difference there is that with Sandman, his photo, his image was everywhere. You can change your name. There's not much you're going to do about your appearance.
Okay, Washington Post, $250 million. Mm-hmm. CNN, $275 million.
Wow. Yeah. Yep. I mean, but that kind of labeling, I mean, on that scale, it was, while it was an indirect labeling, it's kind of worse because you're floating. It's almost like the Mueller approach. You're floating that idea, making people think you're implying he's a bigot because those kids were out there supporting Trump. You're right. Implying he was a bigot because you made it look like that the Native American man, and I forget his name, was being oppressed and shut down and shouted down by these students. You're implying that their actions were nefarious in nature. And the fact of the matter is it wasn't the case at all.
No, not at all. In fact, those that were to blame were the ones who were perceived as the victims because of the first edited video that was right. out that everybody jumped upon.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you have to look at situations, whether it's a small town, you know, in a bakery or, you know, especially a small town. I mean, that's your whole world, and it's a very small world. I mean, if there is any kind of, I don't know, rumor or talk about somebody or an establishment, that's going to shut a family completely out, down. That's going to cause damage.
Especially in a small town.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a small circle that gets around by lunch, and then it's over. So, I wonder, though, in today's world, how many judges, how many juries find the same?
It'll be interesting to see where the Sandman, how long it will take to either mm-hmm. settle it out
right.
of court
right.
or how long this takes, because the CNN suit was in March.
Yeah, right.
So one wonders what's going on behind the scenes.
Even the smaller, much smaller lawsuits take a long time. I can't imagine how long this one might take. It might be a few years before we see. But then again, if they want to get this behind them, a CNN, Washington Post, whoever it is, then there could be a settlement that the family agrees to and they move on.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Just quickly, because we just spent a little time talking about it when we were talking about the Mexican deal and how far the Mexican deal actually went mm-hmm. and why the administration might have felt, you know, they wanted to get that deal done Friday and not wait till Monday. And part of that is because of the economic news, the bad economic news that came about on Friday with mm-hmm. With jobs.
Right, at 75,000, the unemployment numbers not looking a positive. They were expecting somewhere in the area of 180. I think it was actually 181,000, so that tells you where that is. And then you look at 27,000 for the private sector jobs, the ADP report that came out on Wednesday. Look, we always, every time we talk about tariffs, when we talk about, you know, the president, we get, inevitably, we get the people that are, well, you guys are blah, 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 blah. We want him to win re-election. Let's be clear. We want the economy to go in a positive direction. If you can spin that 75,000 report or the 27,000 report from ADP on Wednesday, go for it. But we have seen this president's economy working very strongly, well, up until very recently. And the point is, for all of his flaws, there are things we disagree with. There is absolutely no other option, and we want this president to win next year.
But it's very simple, and to understand that when you make things more expensive, it will hurt an economy.
Yes, no doubt.
That's it.
There's no way around it.
Doesn't matter who's president.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. All right, in the news... And this is the one that I want to hit. This is the news item I want to hit because I saw this and went over the weekend. When I first saw this, I went, what?
Mm.
I read this. Trump calls John Dean a CNN sleazebag ahead of Monday's testimony before Congress. Like, what?
Mm.
President Donald Trump lashed out at former White House counsel John Dean's planned testimony before Congress, calling Dean a CNN sleazebag attorney. So I read that first sentence.
All right.
From Mediaite.com. I read that. I'm like, there was no White House counsel by the name of John Dean?
Hmm.
I mean, not since, like, the Nixon era.
Yeah.
It's John Dean from the Nixon era. Since he was involved in Watergate, he's good. The Democrats are bringing him in
testify. I saw that the other day.
I can't make this up.
Yes, no, I saw that Watergate official to testify. I did see that at the end of last week, and I guess I didn't know it was John Dean.
Yeah, the White House Judiciary Committee, led by Chairman Gerald Nadler, announced hearings that would be held as part of an effort to highlight the findings of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report. So they're bringing John Dean in to testify from Watergate.
Wow.
And because I'm thinking that Trump is screaming about this on Twitter because it's somebody who has served him. And I'm thinking to myself, nobody's been in his administration by the name of John Dean. What's going on? Oh,
yeah.
They're trying to tie Watergate into all of this. Go ahead. You want a Watergate? I got a Watergate for you. I got a big Watergate for you.
Exactly.
How about the former head of the CIA under Obama? Again, the head of the CIA who legitimized Russian propaganda and Russian disinformation in order to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election. I've got a Watergate for you. I tell you, I burst out laughing when I finally realized what they were doing. I'm like, the Democrats are bringing John Dean in to tell, are you kidding me? And when they said, I don't watch CNN much, so I had I had no idea that he was a
contributor
on CNN.
All right.
So I'm thinking, did I miss something? Was there another guy, aide by the name of John Dean? Because why is Trump going nuts? And I think he saw that they're bringing in the former Watergate John Dean.
Well, and the obvious attempt to make this look like Watergate.
Yes. I mean, but it's so bad, it's so poor,
yes,
because the majority of Americans will go, who?
Who? Well, and the real critical thinkers, I mean, unless you're a hack, that do know, will look at this and go, what's the point? What does he have to do with anything?
That made me laugh the hardest over the weekend because I couldn't figure I couldn't figure it out.
Right.
Well, why is Trump getting up? Oh, they're bringing in the water.
Well, it would be like another football star that was involved in a double murder, and then you have somebody from the OJ trial come in and you get them to testify. Putting them on a panel on television and having them share their experience is one thing. We're talking about testifying on Capitol Hill. But when first of all, it's light years apart, relatively speaking. It has neither event has anything to do with each other. Except for the fact that if you want to get close to a massive presidential scandal, you really have to look at the other side of it and ask yourself if that entire investigation was properly predicated, which most believe, including me, that it was not. But this is Nadler wants the show. Remember, Kimberly Strassel.
Well, I know. Well, it's almost like I want a show just to please myself.
Yes,
I don't. It's not going to do anything. But if we sit and pretend that we're doing something as Democrats, this might make us feel good.
Right.
I'm telling you, I can't wait for everything. I can't wait for everything to come down. It's fascinating as to where it's going to go. I was reading here. This is really interesting from, it's so thick.
Yeah.
Andrew McCarthy over the weekend, Steele's shoddy dossier. He writes, could former Obama administration intelligence chiefs run away faster from the Steele dossier? Pseudo-intelligence, scoffs former National Intelligence Director James Clapper in his new memoir, after having arranged the dossier to be included in a briefing of then-President-elect Donald Trump, ensuring that it would be a published agency product, and hopes that we don't notice his behind-the-scenes stoking of the dossier's explosive allegations during the 2016 campaign. Salacious and unverified, sniffs former FBI Director James Comey after his bureau repeatedly relied on the dossier to obtain surveillance warrants in federal court. And then he goes on to talk about, by any objective measure, Steele's dossier is a shoddy piece of work. And just goes on. This is an 18-page story. But talk about how Steele no longer stands behind his work. Remember, he had to... He was sued for libel in Britain, had to answer questions under oath, and the dossier disintegrated into unverified bits of raw intelligence that he passed along because they warranted further investigation, not because they were, true. But it goes through the entire thing about now they're all running away from it, and they all are.
Yeah, they are.
And so's Brennan. They're all running away from it as if they had nothing to do with it, yet they used it as a major piece of the investigation. The more that I see this, the more that I understand that, why you see Barr going down the path that he's going down. Remember, there are things we don't know. There are things that we can surmise. We've connected so many of the dots, but still, you can connect a lot of the dots, and then there's a blurry line from one dot to another because you're not sure. Barr knows it.
Right.
Because he seems to be approaching this with a certain confidence, especially with the dossier, that this was garbage. Now, we all know it was garbage. But the fact is that we know it was used, and we know because we have seen the unredacted application. Excuse me. We've seen the redacted application. Mm-hmm. Let me make sure I get the words right. The redacted application, and when you look at that, except for the two pages, you see that the entirety of getting the FISA warrant was based on the Steele dossier.
Yeah,
So how can they run from it now without Barr looking at it and saying, that's an admission that this was bogus to begin with?
Mark Meadows on with Maria Bartiromo over the weekend, Sunday morning futures, and he was talking about the IG report. He said one of the reasons, a quote here from Mark Meadows, one of the reasons for that is additional information has been given to the Inspector General for them to investigate. But I believe, based on the documents I've seen, that crimes were committed and people need to go to jail, end quote. And he's referring to investigating the investigators and all of that. It's now he said, again, this was yesterday on on Fox News, that the investigating the investigators, the DOJ Inspector General's report is not going to come out this month as previously stated. And I'm wondering here if it's because they found more.
Well,
they found,
what was it, the story that I write? I don't think we said on the show because we found it so late Friday and we were wondering about it. Because
I think
it
you
said,
did mention it, though, but yeah.
Go ahead. I mention it on the air?
Yeah, I think
I
so.
Because I thought I didn't mention it on the air because we wanted to verify it, but it was a story that had said that the dossier is expected to come out as soon as this month or as late as October. Mm. And you and I said, where did this come from? October was the first. And so we wanted to check on it before we said anything on the air. And that's the second thing.
Ah, okay. So again,
I don't think I did mention that.
Okay. But think about that first part that I mentioned in that quote. Additional information has been, again, according to Mark Meadows, additional information has been given to the IG for them to investigate. That would be huge. Because if again, all is accurate and true, he says, but I believe, based on the documents I've seen, that crimes were committed and people need to go to jail. Keep in mind, he's a politician. I don't want to put him in the same corner as Adam Schiff, but let's see it before we get into judgment on that.
We've said that all along.
But if accurate and true, in terms of more information going to, first of all, that would explain the recent chatter, if you will, and what you came across on Friday morning, that it could be, you know, much later in the year before we see it. My question is, what additional information, based on what?
And what takes that long to investigate?
Well, if he has new information, that changes it, right?
The dynamics
will change, saying, okay, here's, and it could be, you know, anything, but that would take, okay, now, it's like when we said with Mueller, why would you not start with the FISA court stuff? Well, let's pair it. If you go to what happened, two events in October 2016. The FISA court issuing the warrant for Carter Page in mid-October 2016, and then October 26th, when the Admiral, and I forget his name.
Rogers.
Admiral Rogers was before the FISA court, and the FISA court, the documents show.
And apparently he went to the FISA court.
Yes, he voluntarily went there.
He wasn't told he voluntarily. From what we're told, he voluntarily went there from the Obama administration saying, we haven't been following anything
that you told us to do going
five
back
years.
Going back to 2011.
Right.
So you look at it and say, okay, why would the special prosecutor not go back to and address the FISA court stuff? Because if he did that, then he has to address stuff that goes back to his tenure as FBI director, Robert Mueller. Because he was FBI director in 2011.
Yeah, we said that, yeah.
So if you look at this, if additional information was given to the IG, Inspector General, that could have been stuff that, again, opens up a whole new can of worms. You know, that because that's how investigations are supposed to go. If you look at the FISA court activity, those two events, the approval, the FISA court appearance and approval of the Carter Page warrant, and then October 26th when the Admiral was basically the whole mea culpa before the court, the FISA courts, those two events, you must take that back to 2011. It opens up that whole new can of worms. Who knows what the IG was given this additional information that Meadows is talking about, because it could open up a new whole Pandora's box.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It took longer than we'd like, but it's here.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue talking about the new disaster bill with reporters in Tallahassee, Florida, Friday. He basically said it's going to take a lot less time to get the disaster help out to the people who need it than it took to get the bill passed. And he said in most cases it will be
weeks, not months.
Especially for growers of crops that normally have USDA safety net programs and deal regularly with their local USDA offices. For those,
we've got a base of principles upon which to act. We will enable us to move very quickly.
However, timber and pecan trees and such do not have safety net programs.
So we'll have to create a few ideas about that. But by and large, the framework that we used in the previous disaster bill will serve us very well overall going forward.
Perdue said the objective of this latest disaster legislation and USDA is very simple.
We want to help people survive, to farm, and to go another day.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. The only other thing is where it goes today with the Mexican deal. The president out last night saying, you know, threatening tariffs again, which was like, okay. And again, you have one side saying it was a great victory, the other side saying it was not. Many news media out there saying, well, on the 6,000, they got an accelerated number of National Guard soldiers that the Mexican government wished to, than originally the Mexican government wished to put out there, but that was already being negotiated. And the other part about the third, what do they call it? The third country rule?
Right, right.
That the Mexicans said that's not part of the agreement. And
asylum
also,
seekers would be in a third nation being held there or could stay there indefinitely or during the
foreign
asylum approval process.
Right, foreign minister saying that wasn't part of the agreement, and also buying new agricultural goods that the president was highlighting. The U.S. ambassador from Mexico said, not part of the deal at all. That more once we sign the USMCA will be there, but that is not part of the deal. So how much of a victory? As I said 10 days ago, well, talk to me in a week. Then I said last week, talk to me in a week. Talk to me in another week.
Well, because everything, once it changes, you got to give a week. Each of those steps, you got to give another week to vet all of that.
All I know is this. I believe the president was on the right track, but I believe that again, Lighthizer wasn't for this.
Right.
Even the populist protectionist in the White House weren't for what the president did here.
Right.
They were caught off guard and didn't like it. And I have a feeling that when the I could bet you that when the economic numbers came out Friday and they weren't good, the last thing the president wanted was to go to Monday with tariffs still on the docket.
Right.
Because those numbers were not good that came out on Friday. They are worrisome. Our hiring's roughly 160,000 per month for 2019 when it was over 250,000 the last 2 years. They're worried.
Yeah, I think
about
so.
Where the economy is going.
I think so. I mean, you look at the economic numbers from last week. You also look at the fact that you have more and more of the economists looking at a possible recession in 2020. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if I buy into that, but I guess their point was in those assessments, it was about, well, if the tariffs remain in place. I think the biggest concern for economists right now is not just Mexico, it's clearly with China. And can you get a deal done with China? G20 coming up here in just a couple of weeks. Here's your forecast.
We're not looking for the real oppressive heat to start the work week for a good portion of the country. Your usual suspects seeing some 100-plus readings, Phoenix, southern Texas. Most of the central U.S., the mid-Atlantic, and the northeast will be in the pleasant range of the mid-70s to near 80. We've been focused on the heartland, where flooding for several months has forced many farmers to not even plant their crop this year. We'll see that flooding continue down through the Mississippi and portions of the Arkansas River for the next several days. Mountain creeks and streams will be running very high over the next few weeks due to warmer temperatures and increased snowmelt runoff in the Rockies, Sierras, Cascades, and most of the western mountain slopes. You could see spotty showers today in western Texas into New Mexico on I-10. Spotty showers up and down the I-95 corridor. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Fresh, hip, and cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, you had quoted from Mark Meadows a little while ago, and I wanted to play the audio of it because it's really important, because we're going to disappoint a lot of people that wanted to see, including us, that wanted to see the IG report released here. He said it was going to be delayed. You and I saw a story or a blog or whatever that said it could be as late as October now.
Right, right.
And we had wondered why it, and we had seen it. It was right at the end of the show, and I just said,
"Was it the Politico story?"
I don't know. All I know is I said, "I don't trust this. I'm not going to say it because I didn't trust it." And then he was on Sunday and said that it has been delayed, and they didn't quote. They just had it as a matter of fact. They didn't quote any politician. And so I wanted to do an update on it. And then we saw Mark Meadows on with Maria Bartiromo over the weekend on Fox News. And so here is part of their back and forth when they talk about the investigation.
So all of these misconceptions and misrepresentations in the Mueller report, is there going to be accountability here, Congressman? I mean, you talk about John Brennan, Peter Strzok, Andrew McCabe, Jim Comey, this cabal of people that created this narrative that the president was colluding with Russia. Will we see accountability?
Well, it's the number one question I get asked back home in North Carolina and across the country. Will there be accountability? And I'm here to tell you this morning, the answer is yes. Bill Barr is serious about making sure that we reset and reestablish the reputation of the FBI and the Department of Justice. And I can tell you that unless someone actually goes to jail, most of the people will think that accountability didn't happen. But I believe, based on the documents I've seen, that crimes were committed and people need to go to jail.
And what about the IG report? A word on that, because we've all been waiting for this. A couple of weeks ago, you were on with me and you said to expect it within the month. Now we're being told maybe it's a little longer than that. What can you tell us? Michael Horowitz's report.
Well, only Michael Horowitz knows the exact time frame of when it's coming out. Obviously, the attorney general had indicated that he hoped to see it in June. I'm not as optimistic now. And one of the reasons for that is additional information has been given to the inspector general for them to investigate. I would rather them get it right than get it fast. And I believe their whole team is doing a very good job in making sure that they hold those people accountable, like you just spoke about.
So just to be clear, we're not going to get the IG report. It's unlikely that we're going to get the IG report in June. What about July?
Yeah, now that's my opinion. I can tell you, Inspector Horowitz, you know, obviously hasn't communicated that, to my knowledge, to anybody on Capitol Hill. But based on what I'm seeing in terms of additional information being shared with him, I think it'll be a while.
There you go. So you know, one of the things I would ask is, what are the crimes? She didn't ask that. That'd be my question. Right. He'd probably say, I can't get into that because.
Yeah.
But I. You know, when you if it's about the FISA warrant process, there's not a lot of crimes. Manipulating intelligence.
Perjury.
I don't know. And well, again, okay. again, I don't know what else they're looking at. So
sure.
But if you're talking about the FISA warrant, those could be the only possible crimes.
So
right?
Yes, and with the perjury charge, it would be proving that that person or persons knowingly presented false information to the court. In other words, lying.
Right.
I mean, because that's what perjury is. You're lying to the court.
In order to get a warrant.
In order to get a warrant, which is not a small thing. No. A FISA warrant, which is
right. not a small
definitely
thing at all.
Not a small thing at all. So that would be it. You would have to show, because you've got to go back and at some point show that they knowingly, if you believe it happened, if Horowitz is looking at that going, oh, wait a minute, I believe something looks wrong there, then you have to go back and show that there was some kind of evidence that showed they knew that was not good information, so that they were committing perjury when they signed the warrant application or when they said something to the court or at any point during that legal process, they were lying, knowingly presenting false information. So you have to put all the pieces together that show that. I don't know what you would have, but you might have some communications. Or you might have somebody that's willing to talk. But the IG, the Inspector General, can only talk to people who are currently employed by the Department of Justice. So that part would be, a little more difficult. It probably would get down to electronic communications of a person or a group of people saying, hey, we don't believe this, we don't believe it. But that actually could be, if you think about it, we talked about it recently about, okay, Christopher Steele. Well, talking to Durham, why? And what could he tell them? And the question, you know, that you had, did you know it was false information from the beginning? Did you tell others? Who did you tell? Were there communications after that fact with the Department of Justice? Was there a communication with Nellie Orr, the wife of Bruce Orr, who was a high-ranking official at the Department of Justice, and Nellie working for Fusion GPS? And you would see, I guess, you wouldn't get Fusion GPS communications, but if there was one sent to Bruce Orr at the Department of Justice, the Inspector General, of course, would have that, showing they were told clearly by the source, the person who got the dossier and gave it to them, they were told once or multiple times, it was communicated that they were not certain about this information. They were not confident that this information was good information. If that's the case, if they have something like that, then it's still going to take a while to put all that together. But, you know, June, July, whenever it is, I mean, because you want to do a thorough investigation, you want to issue a very full report, much unlike the Mueller report. And the Attorney General will take it from there. Anything that's actionable goes to the Attorney General from that, and then combined with Durham, whatever Durham gets, I guess would be the question, whether it's from Christopher Steele, a number of things. If you think about Christopher Steele talking to Durham, okay, then you have to take whatever he gives you and assume that it's accurate and true, and then you have to follow through with that to get to the next step. Okay, can we find documents? Because is that part of the new information? Think about that. Is that part of the new information that it was communicated that it wasn't good information? See, that was your first question. That should be the first question to Christopher Steele by Durham. Was this dossier, did you believe this dossier was good information? And if you didn't, who did you tell along the way? And how many times did you tell them? How did you communicate? Because if Christopher Steele's trying to get ahead of something, possible charges down the road from the United States federal government, he is not a U.S. national, but if he's trying to get ahead of something, he's going to want to prove what he is saying is true. Here are communications that I sent. And
obviously, even people that aren't on Trump's side on this.
Right.
You know, if you saw Phil Mudd on CNN, he was saying that same thing. Well, he needs to get ahead. He wants to get ahead of this because he believes that he'll be the scapegoat.
Right.
And we went, by who?
Right.
That's our freak, because that question was never asked to him. Well, who will scapegoat him? Well,
right.
It's not going to be Barr.
Right.
Barr has no reason. Barr could, I think Barr could care. I could actually care less about Christopher Steele.
Right.
Christopher Steele was simply hired, you know, to get dirt on Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he knew it was garbage, I want to know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still haven't figured out the possible crimes for Christopher Steele.
Right.
So I don't know. He might just be looking
at
the same.
Some kind of wire fraud or something that had to do with the payment, right? I don't know.
Probably, but that would probably go on the people sending it, which would be more of a campaign finance crime.
Right. Yeah, because if he's a foreign national, then unless he, for some stupid reason, had that money was sent
but who's,
to his account.
Who would be trying to say, well, wait a minute, why would Christopher Steele be scared?
Mm-hmm.
He'd be scared because he would think that the lawyers from those inside the FBI or the intelligence community that Barr is going after might turn around and say, this is the guy and this is what he told us.
Here's your fall guy.
And the fall guy, right, and he wanted to get ahead of it.
Right.
He wants to get ahead of it by saying, nope. Here's what the,
and proving it.
Before they testify,
yes.
I want to testify, because if I just remain quiet, then they're going to go with their lawyers and say, no, Steele legitimized. As long as Steele's quiet, no, he legitimized it.
And he would be, if you think about fall guys, as you mentioned.
I said scapegoat, fall guy.
Right, yeah. But either one, right?
Yes.
As you mentioned, nobody really cares about Christopher Steele, because we don't. So imagine how it would play out in the media. Oh, well, you know, this foreign national, and they very quickly to take him to task and blah, 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 and they're going to extradite him or whatever. But because in either case, whether he believes he's going to be scapegoated or he believes that there could be a charge against him by the U.S. federal government.
Or what has the discussions been between the Attorney General of the United States and Christopher Steele? I have no idea what he might have told him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Attorney General Barr knows, but the Attorney General's office certainly had to communicate with Steele and Steele's lawyer.
There has to be some kind of incentivizing at some level to get him to talk
with
Durham.
Right. And I'm sure they would wonder, well, why are you in such a hurry to want to testify?
Right. So whether he's trying to keep from becoming the scapegoat or whether he believes he's trying to help out in an act of good faith ahead of any possible charges by the U.S. government, he's going to want to prove what he's saying is true.
Well, if anybody,
how do you prove that?
The
only thing you can prove that with is documentation that has an electronic date stamped on it.
What I wonder, for example, we have no idea how long the negotiations were taking place between the Attorney General and Christopher Steele, or the Attorney General's office, whoever does it. And again, they probably wished for him to testify. You just wonder what they would throw at him, because I'm sure they would say, well, look, if you're not the first to turn, they'll be the first to turn. And I mean, these are just questions I have. Did the Attorney General's office incentivize him to talk to them?
Right.
To talk to Durham.
Well, there,
or did Durham, like I said, did Durham reach out? I mean, was it had nothing to do with Barr or just the Attorney General's office in general? And he agreed to talk to Durham on this. You just wonder, what is it that sent Christopher Steele to talk to the Attorney General's office and be now involved in this investigation? Why would he do it if he knew he was in the clear from any kind of crime whatsoever? Now, we've heard those from the Democrat side say, well, he just wants to get ahead of everything, and he wants to keep his reputation because he wishes to continue in this business.
No.
Well, his credibility is done.
He's done. He's through.
So that didn't make any sense. I think it was Phil Mudd who said that on CNN. I went, that's dumb. He's done for credibility.
Mm-hmm.
So then if it's not credibility, then why is he doing it?
There has to be a greater reason. Because if he's wanting to work again, cooperating with federal officials may not be the greatest way to rebuild your reputation.
Right. Having a bogus dossier and then cooperating with U.S. government officials is probably not the way to succeed in that business.
Right. The last thing you would want to do is talk.
Right. So that never made sense when I heard that explanation.
Right.
So why does he want to talk? Why is he so willing to talk? That is the question.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is director of product management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL premium diesel fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. One thing got some response when we were talking about the job numbers. People said, you know, or not people, but listeners said the reason is there's nobody left to be working jobs, so that's actually a good thing.
Hmm.
Well, the indicators don't show that because wage growth also decreased last month. So that shows there's still right. available workers out there. It's just that many of the, you know, the job growth has slowed in this year. It's 155,000 a month as compared to over 240,000 a month last year. And so that is the concern right now of the markets.
See if there is a bump in the markets today based on the deal with Mexico, or is there a deal with Mexico, and does the market believe it?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.